Next case is A22-1547, if I pronounce this right. Froderman, now known as, if I pronounce this right, Sidorowicz versus Leyes. As all parties are aware, this is our first day of live streaming. An audio version recording, excuse me, of this oral argument will be available tomorrow for anyone to listen to. However, our rules prohibit anyone from taping this live streaming right now, so please respect that. Counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument. Counsel for the respondent will have 15 minutes. And finally, respondent, excuse me, appellant's counsel will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So whenever you're ready, counsel for the appellant, just begin by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Good morning. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is attorney Jacob Burkholz. I represent Jeffrey Leyes, as we pronounce it. And this appeal stems from a ruling from the district court. And it's a bit of a, this file is getting fairly large in the district court. And so there's, I tried to do the best I could to summarize, I think, what's a very unique procedural history and how we got to exactly where we did. And so I attempted to do that in my brief. But what is the crux of the appellate issue that the district court, there's kind of a mixture of standards of review. So before I get that question, I think there's a mix involved here. The mix is that there's an abuse of discretion in reducing Mr. Leyes's time. And so when there's an abuse of discretion, obviously there's a deferential standard to the district court. That ties into the next standard, which is, there is a question of law, whether or not the reduction in parenting time is significant or insignificant. Most cases from the Court of Appeals are unpublished in this department. And so if from a published law standpoint, what amount is significant?
Counsel, let me interrupt a minute, because I just want to be very clear when I look at the chronology here. Mm-hmm. That in June of 2022, you and your client appealed the summer 2022 parenting time schedule, which led to the Court of Appeals opinion in May of this year, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And there had been a motion to join, but that had consolidated, but that had been denied. So we're actually at the second appeal that comes from November of 2022, correct?
Correct.
And that's focused simply on the 2022-2023 school year. So at times in the brief, I felt like we were merging those arguments somewhat. You know, when we looked at this picture of a belief that your client's parenting time had been changed and modified, and a substantial change in your eyes, you seem to combine those two issues, summer and school year, where it's just school year we're looking at, correct?
I might disagree. Obviously, the timing was a challenge here, and that I don't think a parenting time that the way the court viewed the summer parenting time, I don't see this as necessarily a permanent next summer parenting time order. So from a standpoint of whether or not next summer is the same, because the court didn't really make that clear, and that we were dealing with this summer. And then it again, I think it's debatable. And so I don't know when I tried, as you noted, Judge Cleary, I tried to consolidate, so I didn't have this argument and I was rejected. So we didn't get into the how much is how little. And I had to appeal because of the timing of the orders. So I was stuck in a dilemma where I was trying to preserve my client's reduction of his parenting time, what ended up being twofold. So I understand that I certainly don't want this court to look at it and say, well, I'll take a 16% reduction and divide it in half for the summer and half for the school year, and call it insignificant. So if we get into that kind of mathematical nuance, it would be a disservice to the view and what actually happened in the record.
Mr. Burkholz, then understanding, I understand what you've said, but the only issue before us is the order regarding the school year parenting time. And with respect to that aspect, what is the baseline parenting time schedule that we should look to determine the significance, if any, whether there's been a reduction in parenting time or whether the reduction in father's parenting time is significant? What's the base by which we should be looking to compare?
Yes, that's a great question, right? I mean, now Justice Moore was the district court judge on this file, and then it kind of went into the parenting consultant, and then it got moved on. So if we go back into what I would call the historical baseline. I've shown, because it was unique in that the party stipulated to a parenting consultant and in that stipulated order in 2019, and that came from what I believe an expansion of parenting time that came from Judge Moore, the previous district court judge. So where does that put us? That puts us at that, get the exact number, 156 overnights, 42.7%, if I'm getting that right, within the nearest percent. I think it's been estimated in a variety of pleadings at about 43%. So if we're looking, I think that's a stipulated fact. In fact, opposing counsel on appeal signed her name to that stipulation that went to the parenting consultant. So
and what, just for my, so I can look at the court's order, what would be the date of the order that is the baseline parenting time for the school year that we should look to? What's the date of that order?
Let's see. Court order was adopted. Let's see.
November of 22, isn't it?
Well, there's a mixture of them. So there's a July 19th, 2019 order from George Moore adopting the stipulation. Then it went to the September 16th, 2019 parenting consultant. Then the district court affirmed the parenting consultant's schedule on January 17th, 2020. And then there's another order adopting that on December 28th, 2020. So I think depending on how the stipulation and the parenting consultant's decision, of course, that was, you know, appealed and reviewed and affirmed. But ultimately, I think combination of those orders would establish that baseline of what I'll refer to as 43%. So I don't think there's really any dispute in the record that there's been a reduction of parenting time, and that parenting time, as appropriately pointed out, is we object to as a significant reduction. And I think if you're looking at this in general, this all stemmed from the situation where mother changed. And so there's a geographic, but even though there's a geographic change, the court still maintained that 43%. So there was not, you know, what's the basis for the reduction? When my view is, what did it come down to? And there's, again, a big procedural hiccup in the middle here because of the 4 or 5 day evidentiary hearing we had, where the court then in turn essentially denies Mr. Lace's request for equal parenting time if he didn't get the change in custody. And so the order that came out of that evidentiary hearing really, I think, created some confusion. And so Judge Sherry Haley said, well, I'm not even going to set a schedule. I'm just going to deny the equal parenting time request out of that evidentiary hearing, and then sets a review hearing. And then we get to a review hearing, which I reference saying, well, what is the schedule? And then the parties, without a motion, submit positions, in which the district court then sets the summer schedule. So that's the precursor to the first appeal and this appeal, because it did the same thing. The district court doesn't really clearly issue a long-term permanent schedule. And then you'll see a whole bunch of correspondence by the parties to the judge saying, please set a school year schedule. And that eventually gets heard. And then in turn, we get the order upon which we appeal now, which, again, we believe that error is twofold. One, that the court does not address the proper legal standard and the best interest factors other than in her memorandum, which doesn't really address any of the particular factors. So I think if the court, which is a legal issue, that can be remanded for additional findings on the best interest factors, which...
But doesn't the district court, in fact, expressly adopt findings that it had made in November of 2021?
It does.
Is there anything wrong with doing that? If the court finds that there's no change in the best interest of findings from one hearing to another?
Well, I generally, when we appeal cases, we want findings that actually address the current pending motion. And I don't think going back a year and a half without any suggestion that we're presently dealing with it is an appropriate exercise of judicial discretion.
Well, Ms. Burgos, what about the language in the district court's order where the judge is saying the district court adopted the 2023 schedule to promote the child's best interest because there has not been sufficient progress with the parties' patterns of behavior? The district court then made references, many examples that illustrate the parties are unable to parent cooperatively. For instance, father continues not to follow recommendations and guidelines and the methods that he has been instructed to communicate with mother. Continues to engage in delay tactics in returning the child to mother's care at the end of his parenting time. I mean, it seems to me those are specific reasons for why the district court adopted the schedule it adopted for the school year. Now, why is that wrong?
Well, on a couple levels. Number one, it does not specifically address that within, and that's one factor. Let's assume for a moment we're going to look in the light most favorable to the district court's order, if there is such a standard, and that we're just going to assume that the district court did everything it possibly could in interpreting the previous history of the parties. Well, let's assume that, and let's assume that's just one of the factors that the court's considered. It doesn't have any direct impact to whether or not Mr. Lace's parenting time, because the parties, if we're actually referring, Judge Bjorkman, correctly, that the earlier district court order from 2020 was appropriately adopted, then we have to look at the complete findings, which is that both parties are equally at fault. So we can't reduce one party's parenting time simply because both of them are in a contentious environment. But let's assume that it's because the court actually references that.
What if we agree with the district court that it was your client who was creating a contentious environment? Could the district court reduce the schedule based on that?
No, because it has no direct impact on the time with the parent. So what it's
if you're if you know it looks like what the district court was trying to do was, okay, during the school year, and this is my language, not the court's order, during the week it's with mom, the weekends with dad. If it's a three day, if it's Martin Luther King Day, dad gets the extra day. And the reason for that is the court was concerned about the drop-off times for your client always coming late. So if that's the reason, or at least part of the reason the district court adopted its order, how is that a problem? I mean, I don't see the problem. Why am I wrong?
A couple things. Number one, I think it is, there's no factual support for that actually in the record. And if you look at the district court order, what we actually found is Mr. Lace was there and on time, and that was often waiting for mother. But I don't think there's actual record support that Mr. Lace was missing his midweek parenting time, delaying his midweek parenting time, or creating any problems with midweek parenting time. In fact, he'd always been consistent with his parenting time. I suppose the other bigger problem we have is that there's no factual support for that in the record. I understand what the district court said. But again, making a conclusion that she essentially doesn't like Mr. Lace, which I think she said so much in transcripts, is that she's frustrated with him. But she then makes, I would submit, highly contradictory findings, which is that the child thrives and does well. I'm using my words now, does extremely well with both parents. They each have conflict and the child thrives with each parent. And then we get an additional.
How far is it from father's house to the school that the child attends?
Well, that's probably in Judge Moore's order that we previously litigated in 2016. The exact Odin to Chamberlain. I don't know the exact mileage off the top of my head.
Well, I mean, is it at least 90 miles?
I don't think it's quite. It's close.
Okay, so. How is this going to affect the child? Because I assume what you want is more school night parenting time. Is that a fair statement?
Sure. Right. I mean, there's no other time, right?
Well,
I can't get more.
And I assume that, the distance from mother's house to the school is a lot closer. So, why would we want to make the child commute more during the school week and be, getting up earlier and be tired when he's attending school? I mean, it seems to me we would want the exact opposite, which I think, well, in my mind, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. That sort of explains part of the reasons for the district court's parenting time decision during the school year. I mean, you know, do we really think it's in the best interest of the child to be commuting more to school?
Yeah, that's exactly the argument. It was a flashback. Judge Moore made all those exact comments.
Well, is it?
No.
How is that in the best interest of the child?
Here's factually, we want to clear the record. They're actually going to school in Mountain Lake. We're not going to Odin. So it's not 90 minutes on a factual basis.
I said, okay, fine. But is it a longer drive from parents' house to mother's? Is it a longer commute from mother's house to from father's house to the school than mother's house to the school? Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Okay. Why would we want that?
Because it's not no more than the public school bus, even if they were close by. I mean, we have 45, 50 minute rural commutes, 10 miles from schools all across southern Minnesota. In fact, trying to get 20 miles in the cities can easily take you an hour. So my point is that the amount of time is not so significant that it should reduce father's midweek parenting time. I don't think there's anything in the record to support that the child was having any issues in school. In fact, the record would support that the child's thriving and doing well in school despite the distances between the parties' homes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burkholz. We'll now hear for counsel from the respondent, please.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Sarah Runshy. I'm here with and on behalf of Ms. Sidorowicz, the respondent. I must admit to the court, I have had what I guess I would call the good fortune of having represented Ms. Sidorowicz continuously since the child of this action was 6 months old. I believe some of the procedural history isn't necessarily stated accurately by counsel for the appellant. When this child was before entering school age, the parties, Ms. Sidorowicz relocated approximately an hour to an hour and a half from where she had originally lived. And that's what started this kind of tumbling of the parenting time schedule. At that time, the schedule could be different because the child was not in school full time. Once the child entered school, Justice Moore, now Justice Moore, formerly Judge Moore, set out an order that allowed some semblance of maintaining similar schedules, but placing it over the school year and taking into consideration Judge Connolly's comments about the best interest of the child with regard to transportation, and set up a school year schedule that allowed for approximately 3 out of 4 or 5 weekends per month, and then the summer schedule. When the court asks the question of what is the order, I believe it was Justice Bjorkman that asked what is the order to look for. Impressed with the Court of Appeals panel in the May 2023 order that talked about, is there such an order? And I would agree somewhat with that conclusion, because Mr. Lace, as the record indicates, has made a motion roughly, I did an estimate at one point, every 12 to 18 months since this child was about 3 years old. There have been, I believe, now 6. There is another motion appealing pending for equal parenting time. There were numerous attempts to try to get to an order for parenting time that could be full and final and allow this family to move forward. And unfortunately, which resulted in the request for the appointment of the parenting consultant, the agreement that Mr. Burkholz refers to, wherein the parties agreed, here was the setup of Judge Moore's order, and here was how this PC could look at this to be given a box to be in for making a directive on the schedule. Judge Cleary?
Well, counsel, I understand that there's a tortured history here. I think all three of us understand that, and that mm-hmm. it goes back many years. My question, focusing on the appeal in front of us and what appears to be the November 1st, 2022 order and memorandum, is more of a philosophical question, but a legal one too. Where is the line drawn between modifying and restricting?
You're right, Your Honor. I believe that is addressed in the May 2023 opinion from the esteemed court as it relates to what is the definition of a reduction. And I think that's some of the confusion with this appeal. And I would point out, Your Honor, that that the only reduction, if there could be a quote, of Mr. Lace's, I would say, traditionally scheduled was the summer of 2022. That's the order relating to the school year moving forward was not a reduction. There is no reduction of time, significant depending on where the weekends fall, of the parenting time for the school year parenting time schedule.
Counsel, given that, I take it that when the court references clarifications, you felt that those did not have a significant impact?
I did not, Your Honor. And if it would, it would depend on where those weekends fell with the school calendar and would vary. So you're not talking a significant 14% or even more than 1% or 2%, depending on the school year calendar in any given year, from the time that Mr. Lace had had for the school year as established by the history of the orders in this case. That was what was a bit confusing with the argument of there being reduction, because I don't think that there's, Mr. Burkholz, I think, has continuously tried to bootstrap the summer parenting time appeal with this one by claiming this 14 or 16% reduction. That's not the case for the order subject to the appeal in this particular process. So it would be the first argument that even if there was no reduction that would be significant enough to create any sort of abuse of discretion or anything like that, because there wasn't that sort of reduction, Your Honors. And with that, the idea, and I did have that question, what is a reduction? There wasn't a reduction in this particular order. The Court of Appeals has affirmed the summer schedule. We've now actually gone through yet another summer and now another school year while these appeals are pending in terms of establishing the schedule. And again, there's been numerous motions made on those, or not numerous, but a motion made to address those as well that's pending right now. I do believe that there's a portion of the appeal that relates to a request for equal parenting time, and that it would be some sort of a violation based on whether or not the court should have granted joint parenting time or 50% parenting time. I think that that's also addressed within the May 2023 affirmance, and I would defer to that as it relates to the argument on behalf of the respondent for any sort of equal parenting time. But it's the position of the respondent that this appeal really has no basis or merit as it relates to a comparison of school year parenting time historically and moving forward, that it pretty much is what Mr. Lace was provided throughout the years that the child has actually been in school. There's no further questions. I don't think I have anything else to expand on.
Seeing none, Mr. Burkholz, you'll have the last word, sir.
Well, I think the first threshold question every family law practitioner would like this court to answer in any sort of meaningful way going forward is exactly what Judge Cleary said. When are we facing a substantial reduction in parenting time? And the district court created an untenable solution for my client, which is to accept a reduced summer parenting time, then to appeal, then to do a motion to consolidate and beg for it to go together. Regardless, it has been a reduction. I don't think there's any argument that there is a reduction when we have district court findings say they're excellent parents and grant them, my client, greater than 50% of the summer in the past, now equal parenting time in the summer. How then logically can a parent go forward each time come to court and ask for parenting time and then have it reduced, facing an endangerment motion against mother's home? I'll leave that for what it is. We lost that, but nothing in that order or the current order, besides what I'll refer to as offhanded, non-holding comments that suggest the parties disagree with each other. And I think there's been a few unpublished decisions that have said the parties simply disagree. That is all of family law. 50-50 parents can disagree. Trial families disagree. I deal with that argument every day. That child will not be removed from the conflict regardless of this court's opinion. It wasn't 10 years ago, and it isn't today, and it's not getting better. I've told that to my client if it gets 50-50. If this court remanded for 50-50, that finding doesn't go away. But what the judge does hold, and every single time from the trial record, the evidentiary record, testimonial, and this court's order, which we are appealing, affirms that the child is doing well and is loved and has thrived in each parent's home and in school. What finding does this court affirm a reduction of parenting time? I just struggle finding anything in the record because if we're referencing distances, that was dealt with, that's res judicata, not appealed, 43% granted by Judge Moore, when the distance was actually moved prior to the order on the school change, moving all the way to Odin. So mother moves all the way to Odin. That's again, the 90 minutes that's referenced incorrectly because we litigated the school issue, that got moved to Mountain Lake. So now that we're in Mountain Lake, it is 60 miles. And this is, I don't want any confusion in the factual record. We're left with Mr. Lace coming as a farmer on time every day, trying to come to school. If we're looking at another factual record, there's a current opposition to father even showing up and having lunch at school with the child. This is the kind of animosity that is bred on both sides. If there's any sort of argument from the district court, this is a mutual issue between the parties. This is not a one-sided transaction when it comes to conflict. So what are we left with? Mr. Lace being an excellent father and absolutely should have at least his minimum court ordered, stipulated, and previously ordered on at least three occasions, 43% parenting time. So what I'm asking for this court is to reverse and to remand this court simply to reinforce the parenting time that had been in place because there's no basis to continue to further reduction. Otherwise, what happens? What is the logical outcropping of this decision if it's affirmed? Now we simply can reduce, by my estimations, about, as I tell all my clients, under 8%. If this court wants an estimation from all of the unpublished and published records, what I think to be a potentially insignificant argument is less than 8%. And with a 7-day week, if you do the math, it's really hard to divide 7 as a prime number into some sort of fractionalized parenting mathematical equations. But what are we left with? Less than that maybe is insignificant, but if a district court chops up 7% over three orders in 1 year, then we're left with affirming 7% three times and we get a 21% reduction that can never be overturned on appeal. That's the scary result of this decision for every practitioner that will exist from today going forward that I want this court to look at. And that's exactly what where we're headed. We'll have Lace 3 next year and another 7% reduction. And a simple rubber stamping of insignificant, I hope not. So I ask the court to deal with those philosophical questions in this appeal.
Thank you, counsel, for the appellant. Thank you, counsel, for the respondent. We will issue our decision in 90 days. The matter is submitted.
Thank you.